I think that we're going to start to see the best companies blurring the lines between compensation benefits, traditional benefits, fringe benefits, time off benefits, all of this to create these hyper customized work experiences. And that AI is going to play a big part in designing and managing all of those different hyper customized experiences.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to The Future at Work, a show where we give you a glimpse into the future of work through the lens of the founders that are building it as they build it. What's up, everyone? Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Darian Michael, and I'm stoked for you to meet our guest today, Anna Greenwald. She's the founder and CEO of On The Goga, an organizational well-being company. Man, this was one of my favorite conversations and sort of encapsulates the magic of what I hope the show brings to everyone. Anna and I talk about her entrepreneurial journey, how a very unconventional path from music led her to yoga, which somehow led her to corporate wellness space, and how her company literally began with yoga mats and now has evolved into an innovative software platform where now she's worked with huge brands like L'Oreal and Uber. It's so cool. She's such an inspiration. And as a founder, I thoroughly enjoy talking to Anna about how the concept of caring about everything can fuel initial growth in the beginning and later become a stumbling block, a theme that resonates with my own experience as a founder. We talked about building trust in startup teams, the importance of recovery sprints, and the future of customized work-life experiences for teams with the rise of AI. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, and I hope you will too. So let's dive in. I was when I was like trying to do some quick pre-research beforehand.
Oh no! What did you find?
I just searched your name in. What I do is I search my guest's name in Spotify just to like listen to previous podcasts, just to make sure I try not to be like super redundant. Funny. But what I found was, I think it's you, is like a full EP or a full like album.
Yeah. Honestly, that's so funny. Yeah, I produced that in college, so it's not my highest quality content, but it is, sure is on the internet.
Yeah, it is. It's out there. I listened to a couple songs.
Yeah,
none of my work, so my team knows, not everyone knows, in college. I feel like most people dabble in music in some way in college, but I thought I wanted to, me and my my roommates thought we wanted to be rappers, and so...
Nice.
I was like the audio engineer of the group. It progressed pretty fast. Like, we were really into it for a bit, but I don't want anyone to ever hear any of the songs that we produce.
It's so funny because actually, so I'm a classically trained opera singer.
Gotcha.
And I
so went, much different than me.
Yeah. Well, I went to school at Drexel University in Philly they have a great music industry program.
Gotcha.
And so that was like one of my early projects was producing that little EP, but yeah, it kind of led me to the business I'm in now in the weirdest way. I got a vocal cord injury during school and I couldn't talk. And so as part of my rehab regimen, I was prescribed yoga. And I was like, absolutely not. I hate exercise and I hate hippies and there's no way, you know, not actually, but I was just like, no, thank you. Like, I don't need anyone like cleansing my blue chakra or whatever, because it was prescribed and they're like, it's going to help you sing again. I went and I just had this incredible teacher and this transformative experience with just really grounded research-backed yoga practice.
Yeah.
And it totally changed my life. And now I own a wellness company that's all based around bringing these like very practical research-backed wellness tips to people in a relatable, non-woo-woo way.
That's interesting. Yeah. How does yoga tie to being able to sing again?
So the general concept, I think she was tricking me. She was like, well, your vocal cords are a muscle and like there's breath work and it's going to move. But I think, you know, she was also like, this is also your whole life and it's going to be really stressful for you. And she's like, we need to lower stress. And obviously yoga is one of the things it is known for from a research perspective is being helpful in nervous system regulation or stress reduction. And so I think it was kind of a twofold thing there, but I think she was really trying to help me.
She was tricking you for a good reason.
She was tricking me for good. And honestly, that's become a little bit of the goal and the purpose and the mission behind On The Goga is like, let's help people take actions that will really support them, but frame it
with
in a
or
way
without
that is
them
not
knowing.
Yeah, kind of, right? And then it's like, oh wow, like you're taking like steps to like be happier, be healthier. Because a lot of the times I think, at least for me, I was the cynic. I was like, oh, that doesn't work. That's not for me. That's bullshit. Like there's, you know, and I think we need sometimes to be exposed to these things in a relatable way and in a low bar way. And then we own them and we're like, oh, wait,
I actually like this.
You know, yeah. I don't have to be somebody else. I can just like it in the context of who I am. And then that's what I think really leads people to developing healthier lifestyles.
That's interesting. I feel like I've kind of came into that over the past year in two different, I guess, activities. One of which I said like I would never do, which is running. So I've grown up being an athlete my whole life, and basketball is what I still love to do most often. But honestly, I just kind of found myself like being, what's the right word? Like pretty complacent with like physical activity outside of basketball. And I was like, I want to challenge myself. And for me, it's like more of a mental challenge to like run. Lately, I haven't been doing it, but for like a season of, I think it was like August, maybe close to through the end of last year, like I didn't miss a day of running. And it was weird. Like I said, I never thought I would do that. And yoga too, for like a little bit, because I hurt my Achilles. Well, I didn't hurt it. But like my Achilles started to get pretty sore. And I also had like a shoulder injury that I was like rehabbing. So in those times where I couldn't be like as active otherwise, I was like, let's do something still to keep like the motion going. I went from, nah, I'm never going to run, to like, I am a runner. And that felt pretty weird to kind of go through that.
I think that's one of the biggest lessons that I took away from yoga, is that we, in our language, in the English language, we refer to ourselves constantly as nouns. I am a runner.
Yeah.
I am a yogi. And the reality is everything we do is a verb. It's like, well, what are you doing right now? And if you start to learn, and it's the same in business, right? Like, I am an entrepreneur. I am engaging in entrepreneurship. I am currently running. I am doing other things. And that is a bit of a mindset shift and secret, that all these things we tell ourselves we are or we are not, it's more simply that we either are doing them or we're not. And there's really no judgment around it. It's just, if you can start to peel back the assumptions of like, well, I'm not a runner. And it's like, well, what could you do right now? Could you walk?
Yeah.
Could you, you know, what do you want to do? What are you engaging in? So I think about that a lot. And I think it's really critical, especially in business, especially in startups. It's like, what are you doing right now? And that's what makes you who you are, not what you know, have done or say that you're going to do.
Yeah, I love that. In our world, we deal with, or at least we hear a lot of like, imposter syndrome. And it's like, for me, I don't deal with that pretty often, because I'm like, no, this is what I am here for. Like, I'm here for this. Like, sometimes I feel like I've never faced this challenge, but I get how it's very real and people feel like, you know, maybe I'm in this, but I'm not really this. So that's a good way of like shifting your mind to be like, no, I'm actively doing this right now. You know,
another way I think about it is, you know, judge your inputs, not your outputs, right? Like, you can't practice success. And I think that a lot of the times people measure their success of like, how many people like my content, or how many dollars did I fundraise, or all that. There's so much of that that's out of your control, but you can, and you do have control over your input. Did you post the content? Did you write the pitch note, like emails? Did you, and that's really frightening, because we live in a world where, like, you know, we need money and we need things to work out. And so it can be really hard to separate those things. I think if we tend to put our value and our attention more towards the inputs, at the end of the day, in aggregate, we do more of the things that lead to the successful outputs. Yeah. But that is a practice for sure.
Yeah, I've learned. I mean, you're hitting on so many good things that have been super relevant to me, especially even lately, like with the team. Like, we've, like, over the last year, it's been like super challenging, like all things. I'm sure you guys have, you know, had your fair share of challenges over your time too. But one of the more late things that I've been saying is, I can't guarantee the results. We're not going to be able to guarantee the outcomes, but we're dang sure going to be able to guarantee what we say we're going to do, and like the input side of it. I think that that's been a healthy shift in my mindset, because before we were like measuring the lagging indicators a lot,
yeah,
you know, or just constantly looking at the lagging indicators, and you know, feeling either excited or, you know, upset, and then not really understanding why or, you know, thinking through that the right way. But we've kind of shifted where our focus and attention goes. And I think that's been healthy, like I said.
It's so healthy and it's so hard, because if you're thinking about something like fundraising, for example, all that an investor is going to want to talk to you about are your lagging indicators, right? Like, the really smart investors will also be interested in your leading indicators. But at the end of the day, as much as we want to say this isn't the reality is, like, bring me a company that's already working so that I can give you the money to build a company that will work. And when you're and that's not just in fundraising, right? That's also in, you know, our careers or our relationships. It's like, we have all this talk about what things should look like and how things should be already. And so when we compare ourselves against that, we start to feel like, wait, why aren't I there? And it produces the experience of shame, which then chemically makes it more difficult for us to just sit down and do the work. It's just a mess, but it's also the most normal possible mess that we could experience. So sometimes that's all you need, just the validation that, like, yeah, it is a mess. And so make some steps to improve and focus on the inputs, but also just, like, laugh about the fact that this is insane that we're all feeling this way and it's kind of inevitable.
Yeah. And that's, like, part of, like, these conversations, why I want to have them, is because it's helpful for me personally just to recognize that, like, people go through similar things, especially founders. But yeah, like, getting to expose that, getting to, like, uncover that, learn. Like I said, I feel like you're dropping so many good points already. But yeah, like, for you, what does that look like? Like, what are you, like, going back to the doing now part? What are you doing now? What is the team doing now? Maybe that you're, like, most excited about or actively spending a lot of your attention on.
That's such an interesting question, because I think there's, like, the practical, tactical, what are we doing? And then there's kind of this, like, meta conversation about how we're doing it, right? So right now, we are really focused on, I wouldn't necessarily call it a new product, but we are bringing our product, which is a, for anybody listening, OnTheGoGa has a product that enables employers to build their own corporate wellness technology really easily. So instead of having to buy some off-the-shelf corporate wellness benefit that probably doesn't fit their team, they use OnTheGoGa. Their employees tell the platform what they care about, and then the employers can use that information aggregated, de-identified ethically to then be like, oh, this is exactly what I want my wellness program to be in, and they can customize the wellness platform. It's just a really different way of providing wellness benefits that is really flexible and really equitable and designed to bring in the inputs of the people that the benefit's supposed to be serving. So that's what we do. And for a long time in the early stage, we sold direct to employers, and we got some amazing customers, big customers, like, you know, cities and large Fortune 100 companies. And when we started kind of going to scale, we realized, like, okay, that can get us to, you know, X million in revenue, but what could really make this company shoot to the moon, right? Which is kind of the goal for the sake of giving it your shot. But also, like, I view business success as the more successful your company is, the more employees you will have the opportunity to create an amazing work experience for. So that's our goal. And we realized in order to do that, we needed to unlock scale at a different level. We couldn't go door to door to door to every employer to pitch them on why our way of approaching well-being is better, which it is. But we had to find a one-to-many approach. And so right now, we have actually recently made our product available to insurance brokers and consultants who have tens or hundreds or thousands of customers. And we let them use our product basically for free and give it away to their customers. And then that way we get distribution and we grow quickly from there is the concept. Building and launching that product is the tactical what we've been doing. So it's the same product, but it's just packaged in a different way. And it has a couple of different features to really help these brokers and consultants, like, add a lot of value for their customers. That has been so much work. It has been such a sprint. It has required us to go in a lot of ways back to the basics and try a new system that has a lot of bumps and things that need to be smoothed out in it and accept those failures. And so we've been working hard, we've been working long, and we've been moving more quickly than, you know, would maybe be ideal. And so if we step back from the tactical, as a, on a personal level, what I've been trying to incorporate is the skill of recovery. So in, you know, tech startups, we talk about sprints. We work in these 2-week sprints.
Yeah.
Like if you were training for the Olympics as a sprinter and you only did sprints, you'd be in a bad place, yeah. You know? So personally, we've been talking about what does it look like to build in a 1-week recovery sprint, right? Yeah. Which is not actually a sprint at all. It's a time for recovery. And on a personal level, how do I work as hard and efficiently as possible by building in time to take a break and read, building it, turning off my notifications after 6 p.m., right? And that is one of the most counterintuitive, difficult skills that I'm currently working on. But yeah. I think it's critical.
Where are you at in that piece? And what are some things that you're doing like specifically to exercise that skill?
Well, I just got back from what we call a wellness week. So at On The Go-Go, we encourage a minimum of 1 week off per quarter. So like a minimum time off policy. And so I did that last week and I didn't go on a fancy vacation. I just literally hung out at my house, went to like some places around Philly, read, went to yoga, and just had a week where I didn't have anything to do, which is not the experience of a startup founder. Usually, no. Not only do you have a lot to do, but you have more to do than you could ever want to do ever. And so I just really carved out this protected space for that. Now, I couldn't have done that 3 years ago because our team wasn't big enough. And so my heart goes out to all of like the early, early stage founders right now that are like, but I am the only person here.
Yeah.
It does get easier, but it's never easy to do. In retrospect, I probably could have even early on. But so I took a wellness week. But honestly, on the day to day, I actually like take an hour for lunch as many days as possible. Of course, it's not every day, but as many days as possible, I take an hour for lunch. And the reason behind that is because the research shows when you have kind of these contrasting brain experiences, it can boost your energy, it can boost your concentration, it can restore your focus. And so if all day you've been staring at a spreadsheet, and then you take an hour to sit and read and immerse your mind in a story about like people who are magical that can move rocks, which is the fantasy book that I'm currently reading at the fifth season, which is a great book. It's really good that when you sit back down, your brain is more creative. Your brain is more productive. So I've been taking lunch. I've been taking time before and or after work and just like, usually people use like the focus mode. Do you know the focus mode on your phone?
Yeah, I have it set just for this. And that's like the only time I actually use it.
Right. Well, so a lot of people use it during the workday to like block Instagram. I use it from 6 p.m. to 7 a.m. to block work apps. Mm. So I don't get Slack notifications. I can't even click into my email.
Really?
So those were some of the strategies that I've been playing with.
Man, that gives me anxiety just thinking of the idea of that. How does that...
Right.
How has that been in effect for you? Like the specifically like the 6 to 7, do you miss anything or are there ever emergencies? That's the thing that I like, oh, the one off message that I need to have. Like, what do you think?
Well, luckily On The Go-Go is a corporate wellness app and not like an emergency room contact application where people's real lives are at risk. You know
That's
what I
true.
Mean? No, I mean, we're a B2B company. So our customers work during the day and I also think we have the advantage of being a wellness company. And so when we tell folks, we respond during business hours, we have a 4-day work week. People respect that. And they honestly are like, I want to work at your company, yeah. You know? And so what I found is that that's not an issue. And that could be a multi-factored thing, right? It could be the nature of the work, but it could also be our definition of an emergency. Like mm-hmm. I have had friends who have worked for companies where a typo is an emergency. And that's a very stressful place to live and not a place that we like to live as an organization. I think our number one core value at On The Go-Go is practice your practice. So I think a lot of the times it's just coming back to this idea that like, you have to be gentle with yourself. And unless you start to desensitize yourself to recovery, you'll never get it. And you will perform worse in the long term than if you take the time and the discipline to sensitize yourself to desensitize yourself to the experience of recovery and just say, it's okay for me to take a break. It's one of the most kind of, to your point, anxiety inducing experiences, but leads to the highest performance over time. And so like, I'd rather start that practice now.
Yeah, no, I love it. And like, for me, what I've like come to realize too, even with that anxiety, is at the very least, things don't break. Anytime I've gone on vacation or it comes about, like I notice it when maybe I had like a work, like a time where I there was like an all day event or something like that. And I just needed to be away. Stuff still moves and I am not needed. Things didn't break when I was gone, because what it reminds me of is like, oh, I need to like actually build in more of these days, you know, yeah. Because like I'll go on a vacation and yeah, stuff still moves. Like it just reminds me though, like of every other week, I'm like jam packed. I have meetings every single day, all day. But then like some reason it'll have like a full day work block. And I'm like, oh, like that, you know, like it's okay to have those days where I'm unavailable.
Yeah. 100%. And in fact, I was just reading a study about, and I won't be able to quote the stat exactly, but it was basically like for every one no meeting day that a company incorporates into their work week, their productivity increases by double digits. That idea of like, wait, I was gone for a whole week and everything still worked. So why am I jam-packed every single week that I'm back? That is actually probably more of an indication that there's room for optimization and room for creating space in the weeks that we're back. Now, that's not easy. And yeah. I think as founders, especially, we have a learned stress response that if we do not figure it out right now, it will be the make or break for the company. That is, I think, an inevitable kind of stressor that any kind of mildly self-aware founder will unfortunately adapt. But that stress response, as our companies evolve and as our team grows, if we're hiring in the right way, it becomes less true. But if we don't intentionally unlearn it and desensitize ourselves, we'll have the highest functioning team in the world and we'll still be working 12-hour days and like panicking every time we go on vacation, yes. You know? So in a lot of ways, another reframe for those weeks off is like, this is one of the most effective trust building exercises for your team that you could provide to say, hey, I trust you guys, move things forward. If there's an emergency where I'm needed, reach out to me, but you got it. And that's like confidence giving, you know? But I'm still at the very beginning of my leadership journey. And I think there's a lot more to be learned there about how to do this. But I think it's really difficult for high-functioning founders to unlearn that. And as a startup founder, sometimes if something doesn't get figured out, it will break and it will be a big deal. And so, you know, it's a normal reaction to have.
Yeah. I'm going through this right now, honestly, because I have a chief of staff and it's a new position. She's already been on the team, but like she's now newly my chief of staff. And we're figuring out how to like actually divide and conquer. And like, I think one of the biggest things is like, there's a lot of things I'm like, yeah, fully you got this. But then she was like, I bring you into some of these things because I know you care about it, even though it's probably like a lower priority item. I'm like, ah, you're right. Like, because like as founders, we care dang near about everything that happens in the company. And I think that's a good trait to have. But then also some things is like, we can't move all the right needles if we care about everything equally the same. And so trying to like, yeah, put that trust on other people and put the right level of care to the right things is a challenge for sure.
And it's so true. And it's such also an evolving thing, right? When you're first a founder and you have a really small team, learning to care about everything is a really good trait to have.
Yeah.
And then as your team grows and evolves, making your team feel like you need to be consulted on everything, it turns into a bad trait. Right. And so I think as founders, these are experiences that kind of illuminate back our areas for growth, which are just like for any human being, equal parts exciting and a little bit terrifying and certainly humbling. Yeah. Right. So But it's a journey, right? It's a practice. There's no, if we all expected to get out here and be perfect founders, perfect leaders the first time, we would probably feel like a big failure, imposter, right? The whole point is we don't have to be perfect, and we just have to be open, I think, and willing to learn.
Yeah, I love that. That's what I've learned about everything, is like, try not to judge people because they're on their own journey. I'm on my own journey. And yeah, I've realized more than anything, like, I'm definitely flawed. As much as I like to think I'm good at a lot of things, like, I'm like, yeah, you have a lot of learning to do, a lot of growth to be had. That's good. Yeah. Tell me about your journey. Speaking of which, with On The Go-Go, like, you kind of touched on it, like, where the origins were at. How did you lock in on, like, yeah, this is the thing that I want to spend my time on and really own and build?
Yeah, I mean, I love sharing the story, mostly because the answer to the question is, I did not start out with a clear vision of what this was going to be. I literally just did not want to have a boss. So my first job out of school, yeah, right. I do. I have a theory, untested, unvalidated, not research backed, but there's grossly bucketed two types of entrepreneurs: those who don't want a boss and those who want to be the boss. Interesting. And both are valid. But I'm definitely the entrepreneur who just didn't want a boss. I don't know. What about you?
It's funny. I have my theory on there's two types of entrepreneurs: those that are wired and those that are called. Like, meaning, like, they were in one way, shape, or form always going to be an entrepreneur. And some, they found a cause that, like, cared deeply about, and they're like, no one else is building this, I need to do something about it.
Like, I think those are both true. Those are, like, we could layer those two on top of each other, probably make some sort of quadrant. I think it's interesting when we think about entrepreneurship from the outside, we often think that people are called and wired and, like, know how to do it and have the clear vision, you know, all this stuff. But the reality, my reality was, my first job out of school, I worked as a digital media marketing manager at a music festival experience company that put together, like, bespoke kind of music events for folks. And it was a really amazing experience. Because the company was about 80 people. So I got the sense of every department, right? I could see how this department worked with that department worked with that department. But it was big enough that, you know, I got a sense of that, small enough that I knew someone from every department. I could see how it all fit together. But I didn't really have a boss at that time. I was, like, the first person in the role of digital marketing. And
kind of just had your own little world you operated in.
I was just in my own little world. And this was right after I had gotten, you know, into yoga after getting my vocal cord injury in college. I got prescribed yoga. I had gotten really into yoga. And I was like, okay, well, here's the deal. I'm working really hard. I'm developing a lot of systems. I don't have a boss. So I'm pretty much doing this all on my own. I really want to bring yoga and these practices of mindfulness to people in a relatable, research-backed way. If I'm going to put this level of effort in, I'm just going to start my own business. And so I made a plan of, like, okay, how many yoga clients would I need to leave my job and not, like, and still be able to afford my groceries? And I made the spreadsheet. And once I hit the number, I quit my job. It felt so good. It was also terrifying, right? Because you're like, I knew I had enough to just sustain. It was not a lot. Luckily, I was really young. I was 22. So all I really needed to pay for was, like, groceries and beer. And yeah. I got my yoga for free because I was a teacher at the studio. So that was great. But I started On The Go-Go, which was an on-the-go yoga and mindfulness company. And I had gone to school for music, but also entrepreneurship. And I had taken some web design and some graphic design classes. So I built my website and I put it out on the internet. It was, like, On The Go-Go. Philadelphia, mobile yoga, private yoga, yoga parties, corporate yoga. And I started to get a lot of inquiries for corporate yoga because back in 2015, it was incredibly easy to SEO optimize your website for corporate yoga Philadelphia. And I got a Google Voice number. And so people would call the website that I called On The Goga, not Anna Greenwald Yoga, right?
Yeah.
To make it seem like a company.
It was a real thing.
And I'd pick it up and I'd say, hi, thank you for calling On The Goga. How can I direct your call? And they'd be like, oh, I'd like to schedule a corporate yoga class for my company. I'd say, all right, just one moment. Let me connect you. Hi, this is Anna. How can I help you? And people would be like, oh, this is great. I want to schedule a corporate yoga class. And I'm like, well, I'm the CEO, but your company sounds so great
that
I'm going to come out myself and personally teach the class. And that's so picture me in a bright orange Prius C, which is like a miniature Prius, like your classic stereotypical yoga instructor with suitcases of yoga mats. And I would go around to these companies and I would teach yoga and I would teach mindfulness. And eventually I pivoted to fully corporate. I had some other clients to begin with. Like I taught yoga to an Eagles player, which was really cool. I would do like bachelorette parties, which was fun. But
which Eagles player?
Nelson Aguilar.
Okay.
The Eagles player that I taught.
Did we establish that I'm a huge Eagles fan? And my older brother played for the Eagles.
Well, then you probably were not, you know, that was.
Yeah. I was like, was it him? Was it my brother?
Yeah. Oh, that would be awesome. It's funny because I'm not into football at all. So when he called me up, he was a friend of someone who had taken my classes. I was like, I don't know anything. I don't know who you are. But yeah. He was an awesome guy. But he was like an example of a private yoga client that I had. And I just realized that corporate was the way to go for a couple of reasons. Number one of the reasons I started wanting to be a yoga instructor is because I wanted these practices, which are, call them yoga, call them mindfulness. They show up across the globe in all sorts of cultures. It's just a practice of self-awareness. And I wanted it to be accessible to anybody, not just the type of person that would feel comfortable or would have the financial means to go into a yoga studio and practice, right? And if you're teaching private yoga, guess what? You're not really creating that much access. But if you're getting paid by companies to go in and teach yoga classes to their employees for free, you're creating a lot of access.
Yeah.
And that's what On The Goga became. It was a mobile, on-site mindfulness yoga, but then we started doing nutrition and ergonomics and financial literacy, an on-site wellness training company in Philadelphia.
You actually had brought someone else besides
yourself. Other coaches. Yeah, we had nutritionists, chiropractors, you know, and a little tiny full-time team and totally bootstrapped. Like we're just like running on our own revenue, not making a lot of money at all, but getting it up and running. And we'd actually gotten it to a pretty good clip. My co-founder joined the company in 2020, Dr. Ali Goldstein. She's an organizational clinical psychologist. So we started actually not just doing the trainings, but doing surveying and talking with the teams and doing focus groups to figure out what would a culture of wellness look like at this organization. And it's not just a yoga class. It's changing meeting structure, talking about compensation structure, organizational structure, all these different things. And so that had gotten to a point where we were just getting it off the ground in 2020. So 2020 hit, and within a week, we took all of our workshops that we had been conducting and all of our consulting that we're doing and brought it all virtual. And long story not so short, we ended up building an MVP of what our platform could look like, and people loved it. And it took off, and people started wanting more and more of it. So we built the base version of the product, and it just caught fire. And then we got into Techstars and, you know, had this vision of basically taking what we had been doing and productizing it and having a product that would take in the genuine inputs of employees and use them to create custom wellness benefits that were scalable because they were based in technology. And so that's what we did through Techstars. We got that version of the company ready to scale. And since then we've been, you know, we've wound down the consulting and on-site completely, and we just have our product and we're pushing our product to market.
Do you have any like legacy, like personal clients yourself that you still like don't
I officially have no more private clients, but I have been debating going and asking the yoga studio that I go to down the road, can I come teach a class every once in a while? Because I do. Honestly, if tomorrow, you know, a genie came by and they were like, On the Go Good no longer exists, what do you want to do? I'm like, put me back in a yoga studio. That's what I love to do.
I love it. Yeah. What is like the state right now of corporate wellness, and how do you guys position? I feel like for us at Qualify, like over like the 5+ year journey that we've been on, the talent market has shifted in so many different ways, and we've always been able to like kind of reshift our messaging to adapt to that. Like, what is the latest for corporate wellness, and how do you guys talk about your place and why companies should really evaluate, like really look to improve their programs through you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the fundamental premise of corporate wellness, we have been since the beginning kind of promoting a shift from the idea that corporate wellness is a healthcare intervention to get unhealthy employees healthier so that you reduce healthcare outcomes. That's kind of been the consistent pitch. That pitch is not validated. Unless you are a massive, massive company that can create hyper-specific interventions at scale, there is probably no value to your company in terms of healthcare cost reduction when it comes to wellness programs. That being said, a lot of people would then like to say, well, then what's the point? But in fact, the reality that we've known for a very long time and time again, survey after survey, study after study comes out and shows that happy people are high-performing people. Our motto at On the Go-Go is happy people do great things. And so creating a company culture where employees feel cared for, supported, and have the tools, structure, and resources to live lives that are emotionally, physically, socially, financially, and environmentally well, they are more likely to stay at your company, which reduces turnover by a lot. They are more likely to go out of their way to be high performers and engage. They're more likely to put in high quality work that generates additional revenue for your organization. And the tricky part about this is that for a long time, there's been no way to create one program that would help everyone. But with the advancements that we have in technology and now the advancements that we have in artificial intelligence, we can take in the inputs of individual employees and use them to predict what the best interventions, what the best set of benefits will be, all of that to create better workplace cultures. Yeah. And so that's the future. The future of well-being is a more broad view to a combination of benefits, workplace practices, and workforce strategy that creates a culture where people want to come and stay, and that encourages high performance. What that looks like in terms of how we fit into the picture is that a lot of the existing corporate wellness platforms out there are basically just digitized versions of old school wellness programs. Like, sync your Fitbit, get your steps in, right?
Yeah.
Our platform asks employees, what do you care about? What do you want? How do you like to learn? And then uses that data to pair them with the content and resources that's going to be most relevant to them. And then we actually provide them that content in the workday when it matters the most.
Yeah.
And so that's what our benefits look like. It enables us to create hyper customized wellness programs. But using technology, we can do that at scale. And so hyper-customization is a huge trend. A focus on an expanded definition of what well-being means is a huge trend. And this idea of using data and data on employee interests and activity and utilization to inform and create the best fit benefits, those are kind of three areas where we see the industry going, and that we're building our product around that, which is a very far step away from just get Brenda from accounting to eat more carrots so that your health insurance bill goes down next month.
Yeah. No, are you able to give, probably more for me than anyone else, but to help me like understand like what that customization looks like, is there like a, maybe like a favorite customer example and what that kind of translated to?
Yeah. So we look at customization on kind of two critical levels, right? There's the employee level. So you and I would both go into our platform and pick different interests, right? And so I might be paired then with content based on my interests of yoga and cooking and like writing and nature. And you might be paired with content based on basketball and what else? What do you like? What,
golfing.
Anything in your life that makes you happy?
Golfing. Let's see. I guess running now. I'm a runner, right?
Yeah. And it's like, maybe you're a parent. Maybe you're a grandparent. Maybe you own a pet. Maybe you know, you're partnered. Maybe you're single. Like, all of these things contribute to our well-being. We would actually each see different content within the platform based on our interests and based on the things that we've told the platform voluntarily that we care about and that we're focused on. So that's one level, is the individual employee level. And then the second level is the employer level. So our platform has, like, if Qualify had a wellness hub, it would have the Qualify logo, the Qualify colors. It would have all of the content that On The Goga generates, but it would also have, if you have other benefits that are available to folks, they can be in the platform. If you had a coaching or mentorship program at your company, that could be accessible through the platform. So we actually let people take all of the customized things that they've put together that make their company unique and plug them into a single place, so that every single employee has one place they can go to say, look at all this amazing stuff that I have available to me. Right now, the only place that people really have that is like an employee handbook that no one ever looks at and no one ever updates, or like a really bad, like 90s looking intranet. Those are a couple of examples of what that can look like.
Or a Notion doc that might not get visited often.
Exactly. Right. And that makes sense, right? Because we're really combining benefits information. And when we say benefits, we think really globally, like, what's the benefit of working at this company? Benefits information with targeted nudges around content that people actually want. So there's the wellness education based on your interests, and it's all located, co-located on an application that has additional information about benefits. And that's really what ties it all together. If you just have the benefits information, or you just have the wellness education, you're kind of missing the connectivity between those two things. And so that's one of the things that we're trying to solve for.
I love that. So of your, well, it doesn't have to be of your customers, but I like to give people like some sort of takeaway. So likely through your customers, whether or not whether or not someone's using you or not, what is something that you've seen employers do that you'd love to like preach to everyone? Like, do this, it leads to this, from examples that you know of.
Yeah, I would say there's two really fundamental strategies or pieces of advice that I would encourage any HR person or leader of any company. So the first is, when you think about wellness, look at your day-to-day company policies. And I'm not talking about your time off policies, but obviously you should look at those. I'm talking about, how do you schedule meetings? How do you encourage people to communicate about tasks? Do you have a project management organization system? The number one source of work-related stress is the work itself, right? And so if it's very difficult to get your job done, or you're constantly working on tedious tasks, I don't care if you have a massage bed at your desk, you're gonna feel stressed. But the way we solve for that at On The Goga is we collect that sort of information from folks to make it easier for employers to see, like, where are the areas in terms of my policies that I need to be mindful of. But you can do that. Start with policies, because more than a benefit or a Band-Aid, those are going to be what creates the biggest kind of difference in the well-being of your team. And then the second is very interrelated to that, which is, ask your team. And it sounds so simple, but the way that wellness programs and benefits are put together 99.9% of the time is that someone just decides this is what people want. And that is so very much often well-intentioned, but full of bias and ineffective. Because think about how much time we and money we invest as companies into understanding consumer behavior. Why do we do that? Because we know that it makes a difference. Your employees are consumers of your brand. And whether or not your employee stays at your company is a huge impact on your bottom line and your top line. And so ask your employees, study them like your customers, and put an emphasis on creating the structure that's aligned to their actual express needs. It takes the stress and the guesswork out of it for the leadership, and it increases efficacy. So I would say, number one, look at your policies. Number two, ask and listen to your team.
Man, I knew I was really excited for you to be on this show. I could talk to you for probably more hours, but before I let you go, I like to do a send-off. So the show is Future at Work. So my send-off is breaking those things down with you. So one is the future. What is a prediction you have for the future? This sometimes like stumps people. So I like to simplify it and say you can make this about yourself, about the company, or about the world at large. What's your prediction for the future?
My prediction for the future, I'll say the future of benefits. I think that we're going to start to see the best companies blurring the lines between compensation benefits, traditional benefits, fringe benefits, time off benefits, all of this to create these hyper customized work experiences. And that AI is going to play a big part in designing and managing all of those different hyper customized experiences. I think that the companies that are going to lead are going to be the ones that can bring you in and say, how do you want to work, and offer that to you. Those are the ones that are going to win out in the future. And so we're trying to be one of the early technologies that enables that. So that would be my future prediction.
I love it. We didn't even talk about AI. The next is work. I jumped to work. So what is your favorite thing about work or what you do?
You know, I mentioned I just took a week off, and it reminded me that I love my job. Like, I look at business building as the ultimate creative act. You just get to envision something and bring it to life, whether that's through a HubSpot automation or a Canva document or whatever it is. I love the creativity of work, and I love seeing kind of the fruits of my labor, which, while being a startup founder is incredibly hard and sometimes the external gratification is a little delayed, the ability to envision something and bring it to life is something that I get to do almost every day, and I'm really grateful for that.
Love that. I think that's my favorite part too. I see, like you said, business building as an art form, as much as there's a ton of science to it. Last but not least is the at. Where would you love people to find you at, connect with you at, you and your team? Where's the best places to do that?
Yeah. So honestly, our website, onthegoga.com, it's onthegoga.com. And then we're about to push out a whole new content campaign on LinkedIn. So you can follow us on LinkedIn. You just search On The Goga, three words, and then also on Instagram at On The Goga.
Awesome. This has been so fun. Like I said, I was super excited for you to be on the show, and we need to catch up more often. But thank you so much for taking the time to hang out with me.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much. It was so great to see you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Future at Work, brought to you by Qualify and created in partnership with Share Your Genius. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app, and you can connect with me on LinkedIn, where we can continue the conversation from there. See you next time.